Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing, sir?
Real good, Don. In light of the tragedies going on around the world, I mean, I guess we probably, at least for the present, should consider ourselves to be fairly safe, though there could be some situations, but we'll be talking about that later in the program, that may make some people uncomfortable, possibility of quarantine zones. But anyways, we'll talk about that later. Okay. What do we got, Don?
Well, tonight we have an interesting story, Mr. Edwards. We have a really long-distance call from Rome, Italy, from a gentleman by the name of Jack Shepard, who was actually
He was with us last week,
and he's running for Senate here against, you know, the incumbent, Al Franken and others. And he had a very interesting encounter with public radio station KMOJ, and it came to my attention because he was concerned because he felt that, you know, if you pay somebody at a radio station to do something, then they should do it. And Mr. Shepard has not received a call back. So with that said, Mr. Shepard, welcome to the show from Rome, Italy.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. First, to clarify everything, I'm running in the primary in the Independence Party, so I have to win my primary, then I would qualify for the general election. But I'm really using the primary more to bring up various racial disparities. That example, Hennepin County has the fifth highest rate of increase of racial disparity of marijuana arrests than every other county in America, you know. And the reason for that, someone's got to tell the governor that the police get, there's a program called CompStat, and there's another program, it's called the Brian Justice Assistant Grant Performance Measures. So these two programs give the police incentive to make low-level, easy arrests in a high volume, because if they don't do a real lot of arrests to the young black kids, and they target neighborhoods in less time with less experienced officers, they get less funding. So there's funding incentive to do a lot of arrests of real easy, low-level crimes, and it's coming from the prosecutor's office that dictates what the police precincts do. Okay, I'm sorry, I just wanted to get that out because it's so important.
I appreciate it. So, Mr. Shepard, can you kind of walk us through the turn of events, the telephone call you made, the conversation that you had, and the residual outbreak from that, or the lack of in this case, and the promises that were made? Because I just have to let you know, we were talking in a production meeting, and I had told you that Mr. Edwards, my co-host here and colleague and mentor, was the chairman of the board for Center for Communication and Development, which is KMOJ. And back, you know, in 89 and 90, he hired me as an intern and then into sales. And I mean, they had it going on back then, and it's kind of peculiar that this has happened because, well, it's shameful. But without any further ado, why don't you just kind of walk us along, and I'll chime in when I think I need to. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, well, just first I was told that the advertisements were like $35 for 60 seconds, and then he'll give me a discount to $30. You know, so then we talked about that. Then I said also I heard that you get equal time because you interview, like I'm the Independence Party in the primary. There's a Democratic and a Republican, you know. So I said that I'd like to get on one of those talk shows, you know. So he says, oh, yeah, that I can take care of easily, you know.
Okay,
so
Mr.
then
Mr.
I
Shepard.
Went ahead.
Mr. Shepard, yes. Okay, right there. So just to be clear for our listeners, KMLJ FM is a public radio station located here in Minneapolis, actually in North Minneapolis on Broadway Avenue, and their guidelines and regulations fall under public broadcasting station like NPR, KBEM into Twin Cities, and KFAI. And what Mr. Shepherd is telling us is basically against the rules and regulations of the FCC. But continue, Mr. Shepherd.
Okay, well, it's important because I'm so upset about the targeting 9.1 black people to every one white person convicted mm-hmm. and sent to prison. So,
yeah, so
I
wanted to use KMLJ.
Them,
yeah, you wanted to use KMLJ to kind of get the
yeah,
message out to the African American community. I understand that. Yes.
Yeah. And so then, and I wanted to talk on a talk show about these two programs that actually give the police incentive to do a lot of low-level, easy, nonviolent offense arrests and get a high volume, and that's obviously poor little black kids sitting on the corner selling a bag of pot. You know,
yeah.
So that's why the police would never want marijuana legalized, because then they wouldn't have a real large amount of arrests. So anyways, I just wanted to talk about this. And somebody tell Governor Dayton that that's the reason the police department doesn't want to legalize marijuana, because they would have to really get some difficult arrests. They'd have to take dangerous people off the street. They'd have to really go into investigation, make neighborhoods safer. And Minnesota wasted something like $62 million on just marijuana arrests. If you take the arrest, putting them in prison, and the time with the judges. So, you know, in this crisis, we can't waste money. And see, what's so terrible, the poor little black kid, he gets arrested
yeah.
once. Then he doesn't qualify for a loan to go to the university. He's labeled a felon. No one will hire him. It ruins the whole pattern of the community and destroys, maybe the father is taken out of the family and the mother can't handle the children. And the
yeah.
continuing
okay.
cycle, you know.
Okay,
so,
so you
want to talk about this.
And you wanted to be on one of the talk shows, and you were promised, you know, they
no,
have.
I was promised to be on a talk show. And then he wanted another $200, and I'll get you on a second one. I said, but first you tell me what's the first talk show. Who am I talking to? What time is it? And then he says, don't worry. You can trust me. I'll get back to you. I'll get that. So when I refused to pay a second $200, then I never heard from him. And then I bet I called that number sometimes 10 or 20 times, and he has a cell phone and a personal one, never answered it, just left the voicemail. You know, because it's so important. Like, I am running just to draw attention of the racial disparity and how
yeah.
the black community is targeted. And I'm a white 12% Sioux Indian, I found out, thank God, after my mother died. I'm running in this independence primary because this is one situation that has to be corrected. The police cannot be rewarded by making easy, low-level narcotics arrests just to get incentive and funding from the federal government. But
okay,
that it's so important, you know, that it makes me cry. I mean, all these poor little kids who've done literally nothing and their life is ruined because they're labeled. Minnesota, last thing, and then I'll answer your question, is of all the states in America in 2010 had the highest increase in rates of arrests of minors, racial disparity of all mm-hmm. the states was the second, and Hennepin County, you know how many counties are in the United States, was fifth. You know,
wow.
Okay, so
wow.
what?
Yeah.
Yeah, what? It's awesome and it's terrible.
Yeah.
It destroys lives. And see, oh. in Hennepin County, you only have 15% of the population black, but you have over nine times more likely to get arrested for marijuana possession than a white guy, because they target easy, simple, fast arrests to get a high volume of arrests to get federal funding. So obviously,
they
would never want to legalize it.
Okay, Mr.
Yeah.
Shepherd, with that, we're talking to Mr. Jack Shepherd live from Italy, where it's about 3:30 a.m. in the morning. Mr. Edwards, do you have any questions for Mr. Shepherd?
Oh, no, not really. I think our greatest interest, we know all about the statistics and the data, and personally have been involved in that for many years.
And we
know how difficult it is to get the politicians and the legislature and the governor and everybody else, but it's not like they don't know. I mean, the governor and them know about the disproportionate numbers of African Americans, and particularly young males who are put into the criminal justice system. What I was interested in was the violation of the FCC rules as it pertains to taking money under false and illegal pretense and et cetera. So that's what I was hearing and listening to, and it kind of, you know, confirms. I understand we have the necessary documentation from Mr. Shepherd in Italy to verify and authenticate what he is saying. So that would be the sum total of where I'm at. So you want to wrap it up, Mr. Allen, or whatever
do? What I want to do, because we have a long show today, Mr. Shepherd, but why don't you give out your address to your website so people can get further information and listen to that good music you have on there and see those videos?
Yeah. No, I love my website, the music. It's www.jackshepard.net. And it starts out with Dr. King giving his I Have a Dream speech. And then my daughter downloaded on the bottom, Whitney Houston, We Will Always Love You, singing up to Dr. King while he's giving his speech. And then the next speech is his last speech before he was killed. To me, Dr. King was a prophet. He actually knew that he would be getting killed because he was talking about longevity. He was saying, I saw the promised land. I was up in the mountains.
Yes. We in Black America are well cognizant of that very emotional speech. Want to thank you, Mr. Shepherd, for taking
the time to call in.
And certainly after the primary, we'll get back to you and ask what your take is.
Yeah, all right. I pray that the black people turn out and vote for me because I have all these I'll have 2 months to explain to the governor that the police will never legalize marijuana because they need high level of low level.
Absolutely. It's all about profit, isn't it? All right. Yep. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you calling us from Rome, Italy.
Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Edwards.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. I'm not surprised. We are aware that these kind of FCC violations have been going on for quite some time at our local urban contemporary station. It's really too bad. And, of course, I was one of the original founders of that station way back in 1967, along with 5 women, 4 African-American and 1 Caucasian. I'm not going to indicate the names. I want to see if anybody remembers who the original incorporators were, along with myself, of radio station Komodo, as it was initially identified in the documents filed with the FCC back in 1967, if you will. It brings back fond memories of a station that addressed itself to what was going on in the community. Well, Mr. Allen, we've got a lot of stuff going. You know, we've got Russian troops being deployed along the Ukrainian border. Looks like Putin may be getting ready to make his move, if you will. We've got the situation. I guess the truce will continue, or the ceasefire will continue for basically a little less than 24 more hours, and then the Israelis, the Jews, can get back to killing even more women, children, and babies, if you will. They've killed over 2,000.
Yeah.
The Israeli Defense Forces, the 4th largest army in the world, and I'm telling you, man, stockpiled with American ordnance and munitions and et cetera. And actually the reason that the Israelis are, they suggested this quote-unquote fiasco of the negotiations, they need time to resupply. In fact, there are American C-5s and C-130s flying over us as we talk here on blog radio, flying additional supplies, though there is a $1 billion supply depot there in the Israeli desert there in close proximity to their nuclear facility. As you know, Mr. Allen, the Israelis have long had a nuclear capabilities. They do have nuclear weapons, and I've oftentimes said in conversations with American presidents of the past and even this current one, that if they feel that they're being threatened, if you will, they will annihilate Arab populations by the use of tactical nuclear weapons. As you know, as a former military person, tactical nuclear weapons, smaller explosion field, lower radiation, if you will. That's why we call them technicals. Now, you know, it's not like the big bombs. And by the way, today, you know, a lot of Americans don't like to talk about it. Today was the day that they dropped the first atomic bomb on the Japanese, killing 80,000, 60-some thousand were later to die, and wounding about 38,000, if you will. And so this is a big day in America, if you will, when America flexed her nuclear might, and clearly the Israelis, who are buying time, I repeat again, to be resupplied so that they can kill more Palestinians, if you will. And that's what their intention is. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. I watch closely the Jewish Broadcasting Network here in America, CNN, and the Jewish commentator, Wolf Blitzer. I tell you, he carries a lot of water for the Zionists.
He does.
And, Irene, that is just so sad. Situation, of course, in the Ukraine, the United States and NATO can't do much militarily, because if they do, we will be in a nuclear holocaust, and none of us will be around, okay? So, but the other big story that we as black people need to be concerned with, it's interesting and ironic that the president is hosting this so-called African summit, where he has invited most of the African leaders, except those that are on the purge page, if you will. The Africans have to be concerned about the Ebola situation, right?
Yes.
Have you been following that, Mr. Allen?
Yes, I have. I was just talking to someone about Dr. Kent Brantley. He was in Liberia and was flown back. The Christians Charities, Samaritan's Purse, raised $2 million.
Evangelistic organization.
Yeah.
Yes, they have a lot of power as it pertains to looking after the little you know, the children, black children, and people, savages of black Africa, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes, he was flown back, and also a nurse technician has also been flown back. Both of them are recovering. He's recovered very well. A younger person of more strength, and he's already gotten his three injections. What people are saying is a miracle drug. By the way, I would suggest that our listeners need to go online, try to find out who this secret company is, and better try to race to buy stock, because that's the deal that's being cut right now, is that once the CDC certifies that the drug, quote-unquote, allegedly worked, this company's little shares of stock is just going to skyrocket. I would predict a 5,000% increase in the worth of its stock. And that's really what this is about. The other piece that's at play here, and we're basically being told in the Fourth Estate, the media, that it should not be talked about, was how the decision was made that this drug, which actually has been around a while, quiet as it's kept, Mr. Allen, it's one of the reasons why we have not had this infectious diseases in the United States. The drug was made to protect white people. I mean, let's be very candid. The drug was put into play to do just that, okay? And the key was when one of the most renowned physicians and research scientists in the world, a black Liberian, contracted the Ebola and was allowed to die. This same drug was available. In fact, it has been available for quite some time, and I would refer people to the book The River by Edward Hooper, a 10-year study of both Ebola and HIV, which also is ravishing black Africa. I'll say it to you like this, Mr. Allen. Maybe we'll get a call. Someone will try to check us. Both of these infectious diseases are a part of the same family. And so I'm amused by the CDC and others and even our president talking in terms that this is a drug that has not been tested on humans, just on monkeys. That's just not true. So anyways, projection is with regards to this almost pandemic, because we're beyond an epidemic now, we could see as many as 25,000 in the next month black West Africans die. In the meanwhile, I hate to say it, we have a large West African population here in the Twin Cities, particularly in our northern suburbs. You know, Don, I don't think that they are aware that these meetings they have been invited to, where health officials and law enforcement are quote-unquote responding to quote-unquote their questions, I don't know that they understand that a detention list is being prepared.
Mm.
And the plan, mm-hmm. if there is anything approaching a epidemic, not even a pandemic, but an epidemic, is that there will be significant quarantine and facilities, as it was in the case of the Japanese, as an example, when they were rounded up, or in the case of how black Americans in the 1930s became guinea pigs for the syphilis experiments. Facilities will be opened, and many will be ushered into those facilities until they're either able to show signs of the infection disappearing, or they will be shipped back to their home countries.
Mm. Yeah, that's what they were saying in a couple of articles I was looking at online. But it's very interesting because these missionaries go to Africa as if we can't celebrate religion here in the U.S. Like you said, they have to bring it over to the savages, you know, as they
yes.
call it,
yes.
And
yes.
bring the religion. You know, I think we're doing just fine here. You know, and comparatively, you know, looking at the numbers, Mr. Edwards. And if you just look at the U.S., and this ties into the Israel piece that you started off with in the
with
beginning
the
of the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah, because, you know, if you look at the U.S., you know, we're giving Israel $3 billion. They're putting so much money, you know, give Africans books, you know, give them water, give them this, give them that. But, you know, 15,000 people, even more than 15,000 people a year are murdered in the U.S. Another 38,000 die from drug overdoses. And so,
yep.
I mean, why aren't we focusing that kind of resources and efforts here in our own country dealing with it? Those missionaries don't have to go to Africa. They can go to North Minneapolis, you know?
Absolutely, on the south side of Chicago, the west side of
yeah.
Chicago, or Detroit, which is an American city that's crumbling. No, this is insidious. This is very insidious. Let me just say this. This virus, this infectious virus actually was introduced in black Africa as early as 1952. It was accelerated in 1962 when using the disguise of a polio vaccine being taken orally, over 330,000 black Congolese in 1962 were subject to the introduction of the so-called polio vaccine, as again I said, orally. Now, this is not something that we're making up or et cetera, and, you know, I could really give a damn if that's what someone thinks. The documentation, empirical documentation, is present. It's in the files of the United Nations Health Organization. It's in the files of the United Nations Security Office, if you will. It is in the files of a number of white governments, Christian governments, if you will. And it is in the files of the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia, okay? Again, the escalation of this, what became a combination of HIV and Ebola, they try to tell you that Ebola was not founded until 1976. There is a man by the name of Dr. John Kearns. In fact, the system made a mistake and interviewed him, again, on CNN on Monday. Dr. Kearns was one of the first individuals to contract the Ebola, and survive. In fact,
wow.
his body carries the antibodies that were used for the vaccine that is not available. It is available based on race. Okay. And by the way, given the location of Emory Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. If I was in black folk who live in close proximity, because Emory University and Emory Hospital borders a African-American community, I'd be concerned that nothing gets loose, because you could see 2,000 to 3,000 blacks in Atlanta become infected and die, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I repeat again, the very peculiar circumstances leading to the circumstances that allowed for the death of one of the preeminent researchers in Liberia and worldwide, who contracted this disease and, in fact, was allowed to succumb, if you will. We have a situation at Sinai Hospital in New York, if you will. We have a situation in North Carolina where we have a white doctor who was able to self-medicate, if you will, realized that he had the symptoms. He quarantined himself in his own home because the hospitals in the Charlotte, North Carolina area were not prepared. He didn't want to take a chance of flying to Atlanta. He already had access to the drug, if you will, and so he's been in quarantine for about the last 17, 18 days. The quarantine period or infection period is 8 to 21 days. If you're able to get by that 22nd day, you basically made it. He has been given the appropriate drug, if you will, Mr. Allen. And so it's another dark secret, the same kind of secret that was perpetrated in this country during the syphilis experiments of the 1930s, where at least over 270,000 African-American or Negro men were made infertile, if you will, with the poisoning, quote unquote, in the form of syphilis that was injected to them, injected into them at a veterans hospital. Don.
Oh no, it was
there
a veterans hospital.
Tuskegee, Alabama. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, by the way, phone lines open. Anybody got a question? By the way, though, for our Liberian and other African brothers and sisters here. Be careful about these meetings you're going to and the information that you're giving to so-called health officers and law enforcement officers who just, you know, want to kind of be able to look in on you.
That's a little bit more than looking in on them, I'll tell you that. And you know what?
Absolutely.
Now that you say that, I've probably gotten 8 to 9 different emails about different meetings in Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center for the East African or West African or African community. You know,
yes.
We're inviting you to this, we're inviting you to that, and it's all in the pretense of the health and public safety, actually.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
I was just over in the studio trying to track down one of them because on the computer, because it was, now that you said that, I mean, we were talking about this earlier, and I don't know where my head was, but that just rung a huge bell. And I'm looking for this. Oh, my God. The Council on Black Minnesota Community Information Session on Ebola. Minnesota Department of Community Information Session, Brooklyn Center Activities Recreation Service, out there to Park and Rec. 63.
Yeah,
it's right there in black and white, Mr. Edwards. It's right here. Yes. Oh, my
yes,
Lord.
Yes, it is, Don. Yeah, yeah. And we've been in there. By the way, the white drug, I'll call it the white drug, that was put into play and has been in play since the 1970s. Oops. It's called ZMAP, for those that are saying, what are these Negroes talking about? Where in the hell are you trying to go with this? ZMAP is the vaccine that counters both Ebola and in a different mixture, HIV infections, if you will, though the HIV infections have been a little bit more tougher. I repeat again, black populations in black Africa began to be infected as early as 1952 by the Belgian government, who were the administrators of the Congo, now known as Zaire. In 1976, in Montreal, Canada, World Health Organization, there was incriminating and indicting information given with regards to the preparation of the HIV and the Ebola. In fact, there's a notorious and legendary person. Now, many in the white scientific and medical community are well aware of this person. His name is Harley Kozowski. He actually pretended that he was a Polish national, if you will, but actually worked for the very sinister Dr. Mengele, head of infectious experiments and et cetera for the Nazis. He was repatriated in 1944. Again, for any caller that would ask the question, this is all documented in the files of the United Nations, the CIA, the CDC, et cetera. But Dr. Kowalski was very much involved in the 50s, 60s, and in the 70s. He died about, I don't know, 30 years ago or whatever, probably on his way to hell. But he was the person who alerted the American scientific community that this very contagious virus was being developed by Nazi scientists. Again, I refer you to the book The River. I refer you to some passages in the book written by a black medical research person called medical apartheid, if you will. But the Bible, for a number of years, has been the research done by Edward Hooper, an Australian, a man that was living just a couple years ago in England, if you will. It's interesting that there are some maps, Mr. Allen, even in that book, The River, which shows some of the current countries, Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and now Nigeria, that they were a part of the circuit, if you will, that was used to infect major portions of black Africa from the Sahara South. But there were also situations in which whites had been infected, but that's the reason that by 1962 all experimental operations here in the United States had been removed, because in 1948 the first facility was opened here in the United States for the development of both the Ebola and HIV virus, if you will, both of the same family. It initially started at a sanitarium in New Jersey. The American Army Medical Corps a little bit concerned. It was a little too congested. A couple people had, quote-unquote, gone off the reservation. There had been some infections. In fact, the first recorded death in the United States that the United States admits to was a Jamaican immigrant, Mr. Allen, in New York City in 1959.
Wow.
The project was then moved to a facility just outside of Sacramento, California. Again, a mental hospital. They like the mental hospitals. But what happened, some people went off the reservation, went down to San Francisco, started doing some partying. And, of course, we know the history of the AIDS epidemic. But also people did not recognize the presence of the Ebola. They concentrated on the HIV because of the devastation it was causing to the gay and lesbian community. Okay. Then there was an incident in Quebec, Canada, in which a nun came down with the Ebola / HIV, and that was kind of hard to explain. And so rather than saying it was transmitted by sexual contact, they said it was transmitted by people who ate monkey meat. Okay.
Oh, geez.
I refer you to a series of documents from the United Nations Health Organization talking about how the monkey piece was put into play. That was the alleged justification for the black Africans, if you will, being the carriers of the HIV virus and the Ebola virus, if you will. Again, 1962, 61, particularly 1962, a pivotal year. That's then when the polio oral vaccine was used to contaminate 330,000 black Congolese. See, what happened there, there were pictures taken by the Belgium government, who was turning over authority and rule, though with great reluctance, to the black Africans, or the black Congolese, if you will. But there was already significant discussion throughout the European and white community about how to eliminate. In fact, the projected number for black Africa is 50 million.
Mm.
They think with the possibility of this epidemic that they could very well take 50 million black Congolese and all other black Africans right out of the equation. That's why it's so ironic that President Obama's stumbling around talking about what we will do. He would not answer the question on if it was ethically proper for them to take two white medical personnel and give them the drug, the miracle drug now, as it's being called, ZMAP. And I would suggest, Mr. Allen, for those of you that like to play with those computers, you need to check Wall Street tomorrow morning and see what that stock, and you have, first of all, we have to find the name of the pharmaceutical company, but you need to find out what that stock is trading at.
Okay. Mr. Edwards, while you were talking, I was on the AP and the National Press, and I just decided to go over to the medical press. And it looks like the British are launching a inquiry. The London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine of the Chatham House Center of the Global Health Security at Wellcome Trust in London.
Yeah.
Dr. David Heyman and Jeremy Ferrer, all three experts questioned the decision to administer the experimental treatment to Westerners. They said that the African government
of the drug CMAP.
CMAP, yeah, and And he said African governments should be allowed to make informed decisions about whether or not to use these products, for example, to protect and treat healthcare workers who run especially high risks of infection.
Let me make the suggestion again, exclusively on this program. I would suggest that people go to their website, call up Dr. John Kearns, spelled with C, and take a look at his treatment in 1972 when he was diagnosed with Ebola and was given and able to survive. And as I said, his antibodies in his body were used, and by 1976, they had perfected the drug now known as ZMAP. Okay, the Guinean president, the president of Guinea, who is here in the United States. No, I take that back. He did not come, and he did the right thing, staying in his country as his country is being ravaged. He talked about the fact that somebody asked him the question of why this poor black nation, though Guinea was one of the first black countries to make the drive for independence from the colonial rule, and so there has always been resentment in Europe about both Guinea and Ghana, okay, two nations that stepped forward. But the Guinean president indicated that he had made inquiry, if you will, about the actually trying to manufacture the drug in his own country, though he said he understood the shortfalls and et cetera, but he was prepared to ask for money. White medical research and others told him, said, you know, Negro, it will take $500 million. That's more than your national economy, okay, to set up a facility to manufacture this drug to save your people. Don't bother. Just take the hit. And as we said before, Mr. Allman, the hit is already over 1,000 and rapidly. Oh, by the way, I think we'd be remiss if we did not indicate that about, 14 hours ago, the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia, took this to DEFCON 1. This is now a level 1 pandemic. Mm. And what they're going to try to do and what the president and his advisors tried to do with the black, or let me just say it like this, because some are Muslims from Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia, et cetera. But what they tried to do was to block any information being disseminated in significant volumes with just how devastating this is. And a source familiar with the Liberian situation, having both friends and relatives and government officials in Liberia, talked in terms that in the Bush country, in the back country, some of the tribes are poisoning the wells and et cetera, and indicating to their tribesmen that this is a Western white plot that has been brought into their country by white missionaries and et cetera. Now, may or may not be, but the fact of the matter is that some of the history of when both Ebola and HIV virus was actually introduced to that part of the world, as I said before, there is empirical documentation that clearly shows that this began as early as 1952 under Hillary Kowalski, who was repatriated by the United States of America from Nazi Germany in 1944. Okay? This man was the white merchant of death. And what they have done in black Africa is devastating, if you will. And if they get a chance, they'll do it here. And I repeat again, our black African, particularly West African brothers and sisters, better be aware that they are being targeted. Okay? And they will be rounded up, and they will be detained.
But we have to watch yourself here. Yeah, I've been pretty cautious walking around here the last few days. Yeah, and there's another report coming out of Sierra Leone about the patients or the people there are being nervous because some of their family members are being taken to the hospital and part of a organ harvesting scheme they have here.
Sounds like Minneapolis, St. Paul, and HCMC, North Memorial, and University of Minnesota. By the way, there is a secret project going on at the University of Minnesota because there was the possibility that there was some Ebola contamination a couple months ago. But that has to be more thoroughly vented, if you will. But there are programs at the University of Minnesota in which they've been dealing with this for a long time. The greatest concern now, and I want to go back, Mr. Allen, to your excellent work in just the last 15 minutes. A request has been made by, you're correct, by the London School of Medicine for a ethical investigation of how the determination was made to administer the ZMAP. And what a Jewish researcher said over CNN about 2 hours ago is that there is no world policy, there is no national policy on who gets it. Only problem is if you don't know about it, you don't know how to ask about it. But the evangelistic group, who the two white medical personnel were employed by, who are now safe and comfortable at Emory Hospital and Medical Center in Atlanta, Georgia, they, interestingly enough, knew how to ask for it. And the reason is there are people within their organization who are affiliated with the American government, with the CIA, if you will, Homeland Security, and with CDC.
All right, Ms. Edwards, we have a call.
Let's get it.
Caller, you're live on the air. Yes, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. This is Mr. M calling in. I'm a longtime listener. And
yes, Mr. M, how you doing? What's your observation?
Well, you know, I just want to kind of point out a couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think I called and I was really kind of commending, you know, you gentlemen on your research and going into the Middle East and how you were really going into that. And then it just seemed like within 24 hours, you know, 2 days of that, planes started falling out of the air.
It ain't funny, but yeah, okay.
Bombs started going off over there. People started getting killed. And you know the relevance and the timeliness of your reporting. I mean, the Johannesburg Times, the Star Tribune, the St. Paul. I mean, they should go under. I mean, they should just turn it all over to you guys because you're bringing the news to us. You know, I mean, it was just so, you know, how you enlighten the community on what's really going on around the world and how these things actually ultimately affect us.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, I mean, like I say, you know, the planes going down, plagues, disease. You know, these things, all of a sudden now it's coming here. All of a sudden now, you know, they're bringing these folks over here. And so it's, you know, you hate to go into this whole conspiratorial type mode. You hate to.
Yes, sir.
But, I mean, they don't tell us what we see. We see these things.
I like that, sir. I'm going to plagiarize that. They don't. what it is that we see. Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, here, we see these things, and then they tell us that, no, you didn't see that. That's not the way it is. That's not what's going on.
Yeah.
And so we're being hoodwinked. And, I mean, of course, the great Malcolm X gave us many speeches about what was going on in our times then.
Thank you.
And they're going on now, today. I just, you know, basically I just wanted to just call in and just you know, commend you and Mr. Allen for, you know, continuing to enlighten the community on the broader issues that are going. I mean, we see things in the paper, we see things on news, but that's a facade.
Yes.
I mean, that's a facade.
Yes. That's 1984, George L. Orwell's 1984 all over again, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yes, it is.
And the things that are going on, you know, on the north side, you know, the disparities, all of these things continue to go on, but nobody addresses it. You know, it's a hot topic one day, and then the next day they go on to something else. It's like this has been addressed and it doesn't exist anymore. And I haven't heard. I've been out of town the last few weeks. Fortunately, I've been out of this area. I was so glad to get out of Minnesota to get to another area for a while. And I was just wondering, what is going on with the Mr. Flowers situation? Has there been any updates on that?
Let us update you on that. First of all, he has not been charged, which should be of concern to he and his attorney, who is State Senator Bobby Joe Champion. He's not been charged, and what they clearly intend to do is charge him by what is called charge him by complaint, which technically they have 30 days from the time of his arrest and incarceration and booking, if you will. They have basically 30 days to charge you by complaint. Normally what they do, most of the time they charge you by complaint, it would seem to be that it represented a lesser charge. In his case, it does not. They will send a letter to you and indicate that you should appear in court, that you've been charged with, you know, seventh-degree assault there, though there's allegedly no seventh-degree assault. But in other words, you know, it's not that serious, but there are some consequences, and that is probably a misdemeanor and et cetera. And The other scenario, though, is that they will charge you by complaint and they will arrive at your door with an arrest warrant, okay, and take you out in handcuffs or by whatever means necessary. And, of course, right now we are in a tense situation. A police officer killed in Mendota Heights. Police shoot and kill a man in an alleged carjacking in St. Paul. A couple other people shot. So the police are, quote-unquote, kind of on high alert and not taking any stuff, if you know what I'm saying. So to Mr. Flowers, he has not been charged, okay, which means that the authorities are still reviewing just how they're going to craft this case in a situation in which they know that there's a possibility of a lawsuit. They're going to drop multiple charges on you, okay, and then overwhelm you with those charges and then suggest that if you want plea bargain that they can be magnanimous in reducing it down to one simple charge. The only problem is once you agree to one simple charge, your legal action is dead, okay? You have no standing or prima facie to initiate any kind of lawsuit against the authorities for your injuries and et cetera. And by the way, we were told earlier today that it appears that Mr. Flowers is now, is displaying, after the swelling went down, apparently one of his ribs were broken, okay? So to your question, though, he is still waiting to be charged by a complaint. And by the way, they do not appear to have the special investigator that they were talking about, and all of the big leaders were talking about supporting him with. They've gotten quiet. In fact, yesterday, and maybe my associate Mr. Allen is not totally aware of this, yesterday Mr. Flowers went to a meeting which he wasn't invited with some of the same people that stood at the table and stood in the Urban League proclaiming how much they loved him and how much they were going to fight for him. And they told him that there were some things that he and a group he was involved with, headed by Coach McKenzie and Dr. Peter Hayden, that Mr. Flowers needed to step aside and that this group of quote-unquote leaders were taking possession and had conveyed to the governor that they were the principal Negroes to be dealt with.
Well,
now, that has to be a bash in the face, because just a week ago, you thought that these guys were your buddies, your friends, that they were supportive of you and et cetera, and you come into a meeting in which they didn't invite you. In fact, I think one of them actually asked him what he was doing there. This was yesterday in North Minneapolis, about 10 o'clock. And they then told him it was time for him to step aside and move on because they were now in play.
That's really sad.
You know, these political gyrations and these maneuverings, I mean, they're farcical. I mean, they really are. I mean, they're really farcical. I mean, they have no meaning, no standing. They don't go to the community. But back to Mr. Flowers. I mean, I don't know Mr. Flowers. You know, I've never met him. You know, I mean, I see this TV show, and I see that he tries to, you know, do things for his community. I mean, he's a citizen that seems to stand up. I mean, I don't really know him. But as far as, you know, that incident, I have yet to hear what's the crime. I mean, what did he do?
Let me say this.
I mean, it seemed like he was an innocent bystander.
Appreciate you. First of all, there was no let me do the legal piece. There was no prima facie. There was no reason under color of law for them to have actually come to his home with an arrest warrant for his 16-year-old daughter.
Which I understand they never presented.
Not only did they never present it, they didn't have it. And what happened last Tuesday, a week ago, yesterday, which the Star Tribune and others did not print, and our leaders did not call a press conference and indicate that there was an exoneration, particularly of his daughter and et cetera, and that Mr. Flowers was accused of trying to help his daughter be a fugitive. The juvenile district court, Hennepin County, ruled that the action was illegal, and she was released to the custody of her father. And actually her attorney is also State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, did a hell of a job of arguing to the court that there was no prima facie to have come to the home in the first place. But where it changed to Mr. Flowers being being perpetrator was when the police said that he attempted to attack them. Now, there were three different versions. As you said, you've been out. The first version was that he had fought the police in a Hercules manner, fist-to-fist, punching them and et cetera, all seven or eight police officers, okay? Well, one of the things his attorney, Senator Champion, did was made sure that his hands and knuckles and things were photographed. And wow, there were no lacerations, you know, skin scraping or et cetera. So then it was that he at some point grabbed one of the police officers during the course of the verbal confrontation, grabbed that officer by the shirt, began to push him, and then at the same time did something very peculiar, took his hand and put his hand over the shoulder mic that the police officer had, okay? That was interesting because one of the things that has come up is that some of the officers had the shoulder mics and the conversation was recorded, okay? And I don't know if Attorney Champion has asked for that to be preserved and et cetera. But then I have reason to believe that it wasn't because the third statement that was made and what they're saying was the assault on the officer was that Mr. Flowers bit the officer. You remember hearing that,
yes.
Mr. Allen?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Allen and I had a number of discussions in our production meeting. So the final disposition is, as they prepared to charge Mr. Flowers, is that he bit the officer. Now, I didn't say where he bit him, okay, but that he had to receive medical attention. Now, obviously, he must have been receiving it at the same time that Mr. Flowers was receiving his and getting all them stitches and now finding out that he has a rib that's been broken and et cetera. But the officer received medical attention and then, of course, was released, okay? So but it constitutes, because it was a police officer, it constitutes assault in the fourth degree, which is, quote-unquote, a felony, if you will, okay? So I imagine it'll be an assault on a police officer, interference with an arrest, though it's going to be tough to do that because the juvenile court, this district court, has already ruled that the police had no prima facie to have been at his home that night in the first place.
Yeah,
so
well,
that's,
to me, and I have some, you know, correspondence and things with these legal people. I mean, it seems that, you know, here's a citizen in his home. The police come to his home. I mean, and they come in mass. They didn't come with just one policeman, two policemen, three policemen. They come with backup. If they're coming in the north side of Minneapolis, they're going to come with – they got squads out there. They got –
Let me correct one thing. Mr. Flowers lives south.
Okay. Okay, well, South Minneapolis.
He lives right there on Chicago.
Well, yeah. Then that's the same thing. They will come in – matter of fact, Chicago, South Minneapolis is probably – three police stations within 2 miles of that place.
Okay? You're right about
station.
That. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I go to say, when they come to someone's house, I mean, it's absurd to say that an individual, an unarmed individual at that time of night is going to attack the police. I mean, that's not, if that happened, they should have took him to a mental ward. That's what should have happened.
You're right. They should have asked the court for certification.
They should have asked for that. I mean, because there's no way a scenario that a man is going to attack armed police. And when they come, you know, and I don't know what those police were. I don't know if they were white. I don't know if they're black.
Let me give you that because you're asking all the right questions. The officers that were directed to enter the home were all white. Two African-American officers, one a female, one a male, both patrol officers, were told to stay outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stay outside. Well, then that says that they didn't want them to see what was transpiring.
That's right.
They were there for backup if it happened, but not they don't want you to see what happened.
That's right.
So
those two officers, both attached to the third precinct, were told to stay outside. In fact, here's the thing, and this, again, is something that was suggested to the media. I have mentioned it on this program last week. The sergeant who was supervising this entire operation knew Mr. Flowers well, had been a part of surveillance of Mr. Flowers in his home and et cetera, but had served for 5 years with Mr. Flowers on the Department of Justice as Police Community Relations Counsel. He knew Mr. Flowers. He could have easily gone in and, you know, Al, hey, here's what's getting ready to happen. We need to take your daughter into custody. You know, just want to explain that to you. In fact, at some point, according to witnesses, Mr. Flowers, drenched in blood, was called out to this officer, Mark Kukoc, to explain why in the hell he had been beaten. The officer really did not want to respond, but finally walked over to the squad car and said, "Well, you know, I'll have to get information and take a look at the reports," and walked away.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the sign on the car say "Protect and Serve," and I don't see that happening. I don't see that with our chief. I don't see that with our mayor. I just continue to see the community, especially the African American community, continue to get the short end of the stick. And I mean, I work downtown. I see this stadium being built daily. I see it going up. Oh, how they brag about all the cranes and one of the world's tallest cranes and all of these things. But I don't see people of color over there. I mean, I walk over there purposely just to walk around and just see what they're doing. And all this job creation, all of these things. And there's tons of cranes going up. You know, I have a view over the stadium. Now, you see a lot of cranes and things there, but there's all kinds of things in the periphery of that stadium.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They are building apartments. They are building, I mean, they're doing all kinds
condos,
of things.
Condos, townhouses,
left out of all that. And what really gets me about this, Mr. Edwards, Mr. Allen, is, you know, I used to live right within a few blocks of where the dome is.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up right around that area. You know,
mm-hmm.
that was a neighborhood. There was no freeway. There was none of that stuff was there then. There was a place across these railroad tracks called Big Al's.
That's right. That's right. Right there by the tracks.
Right there
over there by
the
old Bethesda Church.
Bethesda, which is where I grew up and went to.
I know the area you grew up. Yeah.
That
all
was
right,
the area
we're near the end of our time. Brother M, appreciate it, but feel free to give us a call next week.
I'll
maybe we'll have an update on Mr. Flowers and the pandemic.
I'll get back.
Yeah, and we have one more caller,
right,
Mr.
Thank
Harris.
You. Okay.
Well, one more caller.
Okay. We have another caller?
Yes, yes. You are live.
Are we
going
to go over down? Are you in position to contact?
Yes,
okay. All right, caller. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I was just listening to the conversation. And one of the things was, wasn't Vatican the Fourth Amendment enter into his house without probable cause and not a warrant for his arrest?
Well, they weren't there about him. I mean, they were there about his daughter, who the court has already ruled there was, as we said before, there was no prima facie for them to come into his home. That will
right,
be a part of what will probably be negotiated. But what happened was, once they maintained that Mr. Flowers allegedly assaulted police, he then became the target. And so the situation would be they did not need an arrest warrant or a search warrant because he provoked. Key word is going to be he provoked. But that's a matter for the courts, and it'll be interesting to see what charges they file against Mr. Flowers.
From the beginning, it was against the Fourth Amendment for them to even come into his home like that, the right of the people.
Sure. We know that, and in some regards, I just repeat again, the court confirmed that in the matter of his daughter, his 16-year-old daughter. But Mr. Flowers' situation is going to be different as it pertains to the Fourth Amendment because they're going to maintain that he took an aggressive and violent response, in which then the Fourth Amendment doesn't come into play unless, you know, you're really prepared to argue that case before the appellate, because a case like that will go all the way to the Supreme Court, either the federal Supreme Court or the state Supreme Court. I mean, your point is well taken. You're right. Fourth Amendment, you would have thought that it would have been in play. But that's not always an option for African Americans.
Then the other thing I wanted to speak about, the Ebola epidemic, that they have been experimented on us since the Tuskegee syphilis experiment.
Yes,
remember
that? We talked about that. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
You know, that was, you know, where it took them a long time to win in court on that. And the other thing is that they contaminated the waters in Africa when AIDS epidemic broke out.
Mm-hmm.
They found out that there was a lot of nurses that shot up a lot of the kids with AIDS, the AIDS virus.
Yes, we talked about that earlier on the program. In fact, it was polio. It was disguised as polio vaccine. Oral polio vaccine. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so
okay.
this epidemic of Ebola is just the same case. Isn't there any way that Obama can, I know he's taking it to the union. Isn't he not taking it to the union?
To the where?
To the union. Union of Nations?
United Nations.
The United Nations. Yeah, the United Nations. No, Obama's not taking this situation to the United Nations. Mr. Allen earlier read a press release or on the AP Wire that the London School of Medicine has raised a question about the use of the vaccine and why that vaccine was withheld for many weeks as hundreds and possibly even thousands of black Liberians, Sierra Leoneans, and Nigerians perished. So. But Obama's not doing anything. In fact, he said in a press conference this afternoon that he's still waiting for the facts. Okay, appreciate it.
Isn't there a way they could take it to the United Nations?
No, the United States government is not taking it to the United Nations. The medical health facilities, society of the School of Medicine in London, is talking in terms of ordering a ethics investigation. And at some point, some country will have to take it to the United Nations. Or maybe Doctors Without Borders will have to do it. But I doubt very much if it will be well received.
Yeah, we're right under 30 seconds left.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling. We'd like everybody.
Okay, all right. Take us on home, man. James Brown, take us on home, man. Phone lines were open. Appreciate the call, though. Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Put your bad stuff. Bad loud.